Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today, we're going to talk about the Mediterranean diet. It's tied to a 30% risk reduction for diabetes in women from Brigham and Women's Hospital. Very important. Then, and this was published in the Journal of the American Medical Association Network Open, then you might get an idea of why they don't invite, they meaning the establishment, don't invite those of us who are activists in different areas to an open and legitimate debate on these topics. If you listened to yesterday's program, you heard Dr. Carrie Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for discovering the PCR, say that he thinks Anthony Fauci is a liar. He is a coward. He was invited to debate, Fauci to debate Carrie Mullis on stage, University of South Carolina. He refused to. Why don't we see Anthony Fauci in open debates, not always with these softball questions and constant lauding his character and his intellect, when there's a lot of us that would like to challenge him? Charles Ortlieb, the publisher of the New York Native and one of the most important voices within the gay community in the 1980s and 90s, found that there was a connection between chronic fatigue and AIDS, human herpes 6 and AIDS. That should have been studied extensively. It was not. Anthony Fauci was the one who controlled all the research, all the funding for the entire government. So a lot of people are disappointed in Anthony Fauci from what he did with AIDS, and many of us are completely disgusted with what he's doing now with COVID, as he has joined with the World Health Organization. So we're going to discuss that. Also today, and I'm going to be testifying under oath before a committee and for New York State and on vaccines, and I'll play you the clip, and I'll show you how I approach the topic. Also today, an original in-depth investigative report on the connection between Google and Wikipedia, the World Health Organization and Wikipedia, as the number one go-to source on all things health science, vaccines, and why that is such a dangerous precedent for all of us. So that we'll share today also. But we always begin with the latest on health and healing. The Mediterranean diet, according to Brigham and Women's Hospital, which means rich in olives and olive oil, fresh fruits, vegetables, lots of legumes and beans, nuts and seeds, and they also include sea food, calamari, octopus, and different types of fish. And some still use meat in smaller amounts and dairy. It is recommended as a way to reduce the risk of heart disease, type 2 diabetes, and other adverse health outcomes. But exactly how and why the Mediterranean diet lowers the risk of type 2 diabetes has remained a question. In a study conducted by investigators from Brigham and Women's Hospital, researchers examined outcomes for 25,000 participants in the Women's Health Study, a longitudinal cohort study that followed female health professionals for more than 20 years. The paper was just published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Network Open, and the investigators report that women who adhere to a more Mediterranean-like diet had a 30% lower rate of type 2 diabetes than women who did not. Now, mind you, they examined several biomarkers to look for biological explanations for these results, and like insulin resistance and body mass index, lipoprotein metabolism, etc. And that was the good outcome. Now imagine, that is not the best diet in the world, nor is the strictest diet in the world. A healthy, organic, locally grown, plant-based diet is the healthiest diet. Supplement with lots of fresh-made juices every day, and supplements, exercise, and stress management. Then you could reduce your risk of diabetes much, much greater. But still, for the average person, it's a very tasty diet and easy to do. So this was done with the preventive medicine, cardiovascular medicine professor at Harvard Medical School. So just one more study showing that a healthier plant-based diet can allow you to live a longer life and have lower insulin levels and a healthier heart and less inflammation in your body, all of which end up depreciating your quality of life. And then the question is, why aren't we following this? This is not brand new information. In fact, even in this audience, we have people been listening for a long time, some people for over 50 years. In fact, I just received some photographs from a couple, and the photographs were up at the Fertler Farm, I'm guessing around 1972, 48 years ago. And they're in their early 90s, and as I said, outstandingly healthy because they have been following the protocols all this time. And I didn't see any current photographs of them, but I did see the old photographs. And by the way, I'd love to see photographs of people in this audience who came to the dance parties. Over 50,000 people, minimally, came to over 50 dance parties. Some we had 5,000 and 6,000 people, like at the Red Parrot, for example. And also, those of you who attended the health support groups, the clinical studies, of which we've done 44, and just people have been longtime listeners. Because once you capture something for a moment in time, and I was thinking about this morning as I was working out, you look in the mirror, and you hope you like what you see. Are you lean, strong? Do you still have your strength and endurance and stamina and flexibility? Are you able to do the things physically that you've always done? Because that's rather an ideal. And yet in our society, we have this extraordinarily powerful and persuasive paradigm statement that, well, you're older, take it easy. Calm down. No one expects anything from you. You put in your time. You did your 20, 25, 30, 35, even 40 years of work. Now, go to Florida. Go to, you know, go over to Gainesville or up to Tampa, St. Pete, Orlando, and just enjoy your life. And for some people, that's fine. But what if your dynamic energy, what if your creative assertive energy, the artistic type, there is no retirement. You can't just turn your brain off and says, okay, I'm going into very slow motion living now and thinking. No, you still got the same energy in your mind, imagination you had when you were 18. Except we spend a whole lifetime, or at least the first part of our life, developing the skills, the education, the apprenticing, the internships of life, where we learn. How many people right now who are master plumbers, electricians, carpenters, glazers, masons, fitters, bricklayers, the people who actually build everything that we enjoy in life, the working class, generally the working middle class, how many of them spend time watching their fathers, mothers, uncles, and be inspired by, wow, that looks like it's interesting and fun and I can do it. But you just didn't get up one day and become that. It took time until one day you were able to master that. And then you go through your family raising with a lot of responsibilities, a lot of attention, a lot of crisis and drama, a lot of joy and happiness and fun, a lot of loving and bonding, a lot of tears and sadness as the pets die and older people die. And you think, wow. And as a society, we kind of push that image way off, hide it someplace. It's not us, it's not today. Maybe sometime in the future that'll be us, but not today. And then one day, as so many of my friends are finding out, over the last about 10 years, their mothers or fathers are now suffering from dementia, and one form of dementia is Alzheimer's, or memory loss, or incontinence, or some crippling disease, like diabetic neuropathy, and now their whole time is spent. I just had a conversation with a friend about how to go. And this person is very funny, and talked about what it was like, you know, changing the mother's linen that was soiled in the middle of the night. Because one of the problems is it happens, and it happens rather regularly. And someone said, well, I didn't sign up for this. Well, yeah, you did. Because remember when your mom was changing your diapers, all right, and never got angry at you? It was a natural process. Well, now you're the good son, the good daughter. It's time for you to step up. But the question that almost no one asks is, why do we accept this as inevitable? Why do we accept this as normal? I just did an interview yesterday, and a person who was interviewing me asked about where I grew up, and I said, no one where I grew up ever got healthier or looked better the older they got. Once they hit their 20s and were out of college or high school in their late teens, it was downhill from there. And it was just accepted that you would get diabetes or high blood pressure or have arthritis. No one thought that was unusual because everyone had something wrong with them. I was considered the strange bird, the person that, in fact, once for Thanksgiving, they had a plate of lettuce and they said, they had a little note there saying, for Gary. Yeah, my family was always mocking me and making fun, and that's fine because it was all done in good humor. You got to laugh at yourself. But all the while, they're eating food that was unhealthy, drinking coffee and sugar and pie a la mode or cake or something. Nothing that they ate was healthy. I can't remember a healthy thing. Maybe, you know, when I was a kid and saw them eating a peach or watermelon, but that's it. Everything else causes disease. And we know that. Could I got them to change? No, not a single one. Nor my friends? No. I'm just thinking of all the friends I've lost that didn't have to die. Bill Thompson recently, just 3 weeks ago, didn't have to. In fact, you can actually see him after 1 week at the last retreat, a year ago retreat. He gets up out of a wheelchair that he couldn't get out of, and he had to be helped into a wheelchair before he came in. 1 week, one single week, I was able to turn that around. So he got up and he was using a walker. And the last day after 2 weeks, he was just with a cane and he could walk partly, but without a cane. In 2 weeks, that happened. And I said, Bill, stay on it this time. If you need help, come down. Come down and I'll put you in the staff house. And this way every day, you won't be able to cheat because he cheated on everything. He came in one day. I got to go to the store. Okay. Comes back and I said, you get what you need? Yeah, I got it. I got it. And I said, Bill, you didn't cheat. No, I'm not cheating. I said, well, then what's the chicken bone doing on your tie? He looks down and says, oh, damn. That's, you know, we had to get him from going into a motel to get a big stack of pancakes, bacon, and eggs before he came each day of the retreat. Had to stop that. Wow, so many people. I was just this year, Buzzy Linhart, the singer. In fact, I was clicking over to see a nature program, and there was this Cher thing on there, and she's singing, You Got to Have Friends. Well, that was Buzzy Linhart. He and his co-author wrote that, became a monster hit. Extraordinarily creative talent. Close friend, lived in my apartment for a couple of years when he was making a transformation in his life and giving up the old unhealthy lifestyle, and he needed a lot of help. And then, you know, he was extremely healthy for a period of years, and then he started his life over again, and I wasn't in close communication after that. But again, people say, well, why'd someone die of lung cancer when they stopped smoking 20 years ago? Because they didn't undo the DNA damage from 20 years ago. So if you think you've made a major step, which you have, and good for you for stopping an unhealthy habit, remember you still have to detoxify and rejuvenate those tissues. Can we do it? Absolutely we can do it. We've done it tens of thousands of times, one-on-one, hundreds of thousands of times in groups, and tens of millions of times based upon the people we've reached on PBS stations all over the country, ABC Network, and all the other books and articles, and because I get feedback. And yet, how few people actually stick with a healthy lifestyle? Well, let me tell you how many. Listen carefully. The number of people actively living a really healthy lifestyle is maximum 7%. That means 93% of people aren't. And all, you can see it in the numbers. You can see the numbers of heart attacks, strokes, new cancers every year, diabetes, prediabetes, obesity, morbid obesity, and being overweight, arthritis and inflammatory conditions, dementia and Alzheimer's. You add those figures up, and even with multiple comorbidities, you're dealing with about 90% of the American population. So, still, that means around 25 million people are still living healthy lives, many of them in this audience. So, send me a photograph and just a little update on how your life's been and your health, and because I don't ever forget a voice. You get attuned to that on the radio, or a face. I rarely remember a name, but voices and faces I remember. I'd like to see, and to show you how I'm aging, because I want people to see that I'm not telling anything I don't practice. I do. I posted 4 or 5 photographs, all taken 1 3 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, and 2 months ago, 2.5 months ago. So you see, this is me. No makeup, no nothing. Just so if I can do it, you can do it. So let's just make this a time to rejuvenate. Anyhow, the starting with the Mediterranean diet is a good way to start. Now, then you can go from the Mediterranean diet to making the Mediterranean diet vegan. And then you can go from that to buying locally sourced food. And then you can go from that to organic food and supporting your local farmers markets and your local vendors. And then from there, proper individualized supplementation. So you see, you can layer this in so it's not overwhelming until you can put it all together. It might take about a year, but at least you'll get there. And if you do everything right, there's no reason you can't add. From where you're at today, if you are 70 or younger, there's no reason you can't add 30 healthy years onto your life. And if you're younger, even longer. I predict that within the next year, there will be a flood of new information on how we can add about 15 years to the longest lifespans now, so you could live to be 115 in ideal health with no degeneration and diseases. Think that's impossible? It's not. We've just done 3 studies that validate that this can be done, and these are landmark studies. These are as important for the health as Bannister breaking the 4-minute mile was, because nobody believed you could do it. Everyone said you couldn't do it. Every mechanic and a physiologist, it was impossible for the body to run faster in 4 minutes, and he did 3:58. And then suddenly everyone else started to do it, even be his record. So once you show something is possible, then people begin to say, well, maybe there's time. Maybe I can. Maybe I shouldn't be in this kind of down mindset of thinking, oh, well, the best is behind me. That's not true. So let's pick ourselves up and break through our limitations. And this is one way we can start. And by the way, at the last 2 weeks for health retreat for WBAI in April, and the last 3 weeks for an anti-aging that has never been done before, and it'll be exciting because we're filming it, and we have scientists from all over the world who are going to be monitoring it daily, because we're going to be doing things with live feeds. And we have molecular biologists, we have all these people who are taking blood samples, because it is a hypothesis. Mind you, just a theory. No science behind it at this moment. Can you, with positive thoughts that are not your unconscious thoughts, but positive thoughts coming from the authentic you, that's the biggest hurdle, change your biochemistry? Can you actually change your telomere length with your mind. And let's see if it works. No supplementation, no extreme exercise, nothing. So this is brand new. I'm very excited to see what happens, and I've already prepared over 30 lectures. There'll be lectures and individual counseling for every participant, but I'm limiting it to 15 people. But then I'm also having at the same time a two-week anti-aging that is extreme exercise and diet and juicing, et cetera, to duplicate what I did in just a month and a half ago at the end of October. So that shows that I've replicated it. And there'll be other people there doing the replication, so I'm not in charge of that. I'll be there, but the rule in science is, can someone else take your protocols, perform your protocols as you have laid out, and get the same results? That's good science. And so that's why we're doing it. So anyhow, that's coming at you, and I believe if we show positive results, this could save hundreds of millions of heart attacks, strokes, cancers, arthritis, diabetes, obesity, depression, anxiety, insecurity. That's what that could do. So it's exciting. If you want to be one of, and I'm only taking 15 people for each of the two scientific studies and 20 people for the retreat. And the retreat, by the way, is juicing all day that you want and gourmet vegan meals and relaxing in nature and learning how to do organic farming and hydroponics, state-of-the-art hydroponics and state-of-the-art freeze-drying. I bought this big, giant machine that does this, where food will last 25 years. 25 years. And that's the future, by the way. It is absolutely the future. And we're right now created a perfect environment for the butterflies to evolve and from their larva. So anyhow, there'll be thousands of monarchs. We have a butterfly house. It's just going to be spectacular. Water aerobics, power walking, meditation, yoga. Anyhow, three different things happening at the same time, same place. If you want to be considered, call 903-881-7008. You'll speak with Luann, 903-881-7008. Finally, in the area of health and healing, one of the most important aspects of slowing down the aging process and therefore slowing down diseases associated with aging is caloric restriction, meaning you've simply got to balance the amount of calories coming into the body with those being used by the body. So that means you've got to have some discipline not to eat when your body doesn't need it, and then focus upon eating healthy calories. There's a big difference in the outcome. If you eat an apple, you're getting some natural fructose in the apple. But you're also getting quercetin and fibers. You're getting polymers, antioxidants from polyphenols. All that is in an apple. And yet in dietetics class, the dietitian professor said, all sugars are the same. So if you're getting your sugar from white sucrose or getting it from an apple, it's the same. It's not. I argue the issue. It's not the same. There's no fiber to help digest it, to keep the blood sugar lower. Anyhow, it's just very crude science what many people learned about nutrition and home economics. Now, so watch the amount of calories coming in, watch the amount of calories being burned, and that way you won't be gaining weight and you'll get rid of the body mass index, that's your belly fat. And that is so important, because the more body fat you have around the belly and the thighs and the butt, the greater risk of a heart attack or also a stroke and diabetes. And one last thing, and that is a study reveals a connection between gut bacteria and vitamin D levels. This is from the University of California, San Diego. which in simple language is our gut microbiomes, or our gut bacteria, the many bacteria and viruses and other microbes living in our digestive tract, play an important role in our health and risk for disease in ways that are only beginning to be recognized. And researchers and collaborators recently demonstrated in older men over the age of 60 that the makeup of a person's gut bacteria is linked directly to the active level of vitamin D. And vitamin D, by the way, we call it a vitamin. It's actually a hormone important for bone health and immunity. The study was published in the current issue of Nature Communications. And so that means just take more vitamin D. And right now, as winter is approaching, I'm suggesting taking somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 to 5,000 units a day. All right? Very important. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, a special in-depth report, a report that I promise you is going to affect every single person in this audience. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you to this program. I'm Gary Nall. This article is now posted on PRN.fm. And by the way, anytime we show a video, including today, you just scroll down PRN.fm on the, I believe it's the right-hand side, you'll see Gary's program notes. All of the studies I cite are in there, all from peer review. All of the scientific references are in there. So when I talk about how the British Medical Journal excoriated the people engaged in the politics and profiteering in big pharma and the corruption of science, it's there. You can read it for yourself. This article is entitled America's Sacrificial Alder for Google, Wikipedia, and the Pharmaceutical Empire. Richard Gale and myself wrote this. Weekly, millions of people do Google searches for advice about their personal health. A large variety, a large variety of illnesses such as heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and dementia, and drug and vaccine safety, scores of other topics affecting physical and mental health. They depend upon speed and accuracy to find the current scientifically based and clinically proven information. For the large majority of people, a personal medical condition or a health crisis begins by turning exclusively to established medical drug-based protocols. However, these treatments do not always relieve symptoms and very rarely reverse disease. They can manage diseases. With emergency medicine, it can save your life. I very much support emergency medicine. But that's only about 12% of all medicine. Certainly, they have not shown success to prevent diseases. Statins don't prevent heart disease. Chemotherapy doesn't prevent cancer. Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor do not prevent depression or anxiety. They're used to treat these. And we could argue whether or not they're beneficial or counterintuitive and counter-beneficial to the patient's long-term health. Consequently, increasingly, people are seeking second and third opinions. Good for them. More often than not, Google will take a person immediately to Wikipedia. Wikipedia's co-founder, Jimmy Wells, acknowledges that, quote, 60 to 70% of Wikipedia's traffic originates from Google. There's an assumption and a reasonable expectation the information we find on Wikipedia is, one, accurate, two, soundly researched and referenced with from high quality and reliable resources, three, written by credentialed writers and editors with expertise in the subject, four, unbiased, and finally, five, objective and neutral. At a minimum, it is assumed that content is scientifically validated and on matters of health and disease from the National Institutes of Health PubMed database. Whether it regards a pharmaceutical, surgical, or radiological approach, or perhaps a more natural medical modality, such as lifestyle change, nutrition, medical botanicals, chiropractic, Chinese medicine, information is expected to be accurately described. Then using our freedom of choice and informed consent, we can select the medical route that we believe would be most safe and effective. Unfortunately, our four-year in-depth investigation into Wikipedia's treatment of health issues reveals exactly the opposite. Many individuals with outstanding credentials are terrified of having their biographies appear on the open source encyclopedia. Once a person's biography is added, she or he will no longer have control over its content. Often they will be faced with character assassination and denigration about their careers and life's work. Their biographies are frozen as if confined in a Russian gulag for political crime. They may seek redress by reaching out to the media, but the media also is fully compromised. They may seek open hearings on Wikipedia's backside to expose unfair behavior and misinformation. Too bad, you'll be met with either deafening silence, ridicule, or even more censorship, where they'll gang up on your biography. Therefore, everyone who has something negative to say will be saying something negative. They may even seek redress from the IRS or state's attorney generals for Wikipedia's gross serial violation of its nonprofit status. You enter a highly politicized ideological war, and the encyclopedia's parent organization, the Wikimedia Foundation, will do essentially nothing based upon our experience to correct errors or reprimand belligerent senior administrators and editors. Much of Wikipedia's chaos over unreliable health information is due to a relatively small group of non-credentialed, hate-filled individuals, popularly known as skeptics. With Wikipedia's co-founder Jimmy Wales' full support, skeptics have hijacked the site and converted it into their personal social media platform to condemn all non-conventional and alternative medical therapies and its practitioners and voices who are critical of the dominant drug and vaccine-based medical paradigm. You could have impeccable background. You could have a background where you spent your whole life in service to the public, a medical doctor, scientist. Doesn't matter. If someone chooses to put a bio of you up there, no matter how inaccurate, no matter how filled with libel, good luck trying to have any of it changed. Since its founding, certain editors realized that Wikipedia was prime game for writing entries and reshaping content as a means to proselytize their personal ideological agendas. This is due to the encyclopedia's systemic vulnerabilities and its extraordinary naive belief that truth can emerge by reaching a faux democratic consensus. In 2006, Wikipedia editor Paul Lee, a physical therapist in California's Central Valley and an avowed skeptic, started to reach out to internet skeptic groups to recruit editors to advance the skeptic mission to ridicule and discredit all forms of complementary alternative medicine, marginalize those who question vaccination safety and efficacy, and attack critics of corporate commercial interest adversely impacting the nation's health, such as genetically modified crops, fluoridation, sugar, junk food, etc. That year, Lee posted on the International Skeptic Forum, quote, "I would like to invite webmasters and site owners to begin editing Wikipedia and Skeptic Wiki. There are many subjects for skeptics to get involved with, and we really need help. There are plenty of loons out there doing the editing right now, and far too few skeptics to keep them at bay. Any coordination of efforts should be done by private email, since Wikipedia keeps a very public history and every little edit, and you can't get them removed. We don't need any accusations of a conspiracy. I hope to see more skeptics in action," end quote. Lee also lists the subjects skeptics should focus on, which include the National Vaccine Information Center, vaccine critics Barbara Lowe Fisher and Vera Schreibner, chiropractic, and complementary and alternative medicine, all of it. Lee happens to be the former listmaster for the pro-pharmaceutical and junk food-friendly Quack Watch, a personal blog founded by a psychiatrist, Stephen Barrett. Over time, Quack Watch and its skeptic allies, such as the Center for Inquiry and the Science-Based Medicine blog, have exponentially increased their presence on Wikipedia to become the single most cited references in the skeptics' arsenal to attack alternative medical therapies and the critics of conventional medicine's power base. The consequence is that personal bias has trumped Wikipedia's rules of objectivity and neutrality. I mean, really driven them into the ground. New York Times best-selling human rights author Edwin Black described the dangers Wikipedia poses for social progress in his article, Wikipedia, the Dumbing Down of World Knowledge, published on the History News Network. Quote, Wikipedia, the constantly changing knowledge base, created a global free-for-all of anonymous users, now stands as the leading force for dumbing down the world of knowledge. If Wikipedia's almost unstoppable momentum continues, critics say, it threatens to quickly reverse centuries of progress. In its place would be a constant cacophony of fact and falsity that Wikipedia critics call, quote, law of the jungle. Writing for the Huffington Post, journalist Sam Slovic posed a question we might ask ourselves every time we click into Wikipedia. Quote, as Jimmy Wells' marauding encyclopedic beast finally corrupted the internet, has Wikipedia lost all credibility, its purported neutral system compromised by toxic editors? End quote. The most toxic Wikipedia editors now terrorizing the encyclopedia's pages more often than not are the anonymous non-experts and computer hacks who identify themselves with this extreme militant form of scientific materialism. They also fiercely protect their own skeptic pages from any citable truths that may cast them in a poor light. Indeed, commercial science is constantly attempting to develop new technological solutions through genetic engineering of crops, vaccines, novel patentable drugs, artificial intelligence, transhumanism, 5G wireless technology, etc. These are held up in the public's eyes as great achievements. On the other hand, you will rarely find Wikipedia or the mainstream media ever highlighting these technologies' flaws and greater risks that undermine their commercial benefits, and certainly private corporations will never leak evidence about these risks and dangers. For example, we access Wikipedia's pages for each of the vaccines recommended on the CDC's childhood immunization schedule. In every single case, adverse effects were undermined and the vaccine's benefits were inflated. Not a single entry on Wikipedia had a complete list of adverse or toxic or dangerous effects as printed on the vaccine maker's manufacturing package insert. Literature that is easily accessible on the CDC's website. Nor was there to be found a list of vaccine ingredients, many of which are scientifically shown to be extremely toxic. Consequently, a visitor to any Wikipedia vaccine page accesses a very incomplete and twisted, extremely biased and unreliable understanding of the vaccine's actual safety and efficacy profile. But what if you wanted to find out what Robert F. Kennedy or the Children's Health Defense Fund or any of the other scientists have to say who are very knowledgeable about the toxic effects and have proven it in courts of law with the outcome of lawsuits? For example, if you want to find out what Robert Kennedy has found about the MMR vaccine or Gardasil vaccine, good luck trying to get any objective information from Wikipedia. We are also led to believe that if a scientific invitation was given to study for a new drug or vaccine appears in the peer-reviewed literature, it represents a gold standard. Just the fact that it appeared in peer-reviewed literature, that's all you need. No, it's not all you need. Consequently, it is assumed that any controversy has been settled. It hasn't been settled. None of this has been settled. A peer-reviewed paper becomes a scientific law unto itself if it favors tendentious interest. However, repeatedly, the peer-reviewed journal system has proven to be unreliable. No decisive effort has been made to reform it. It is simply too profitable and too corrupt to disrupt. But the skeptics' distorted and biased narratives about medicine and health are only one reason to be deeply worried about the Wikimedia Foundation's long-term mission to bring all medical knowledge to the inhabitable world. By and large, Wikipedia skeptics are not motivated by financial gain, nor is there strong evidence that we could find of conflicts of interest with either pharmaceutical industry or the federal health agencies. What then motivates them? It is our opinion that, rather, the skeptic movement is more likely motivated by a cult-like ideology, an extremely radical ideology that is fantastically embraced by his followers with a religious zeal. Yet, on the backside, Wikimedia Foundation also has deep ties with the pharmaceutical industry, and this takes us to its close relationship with Google for the past decade. The Google Wikimedia Foundation Association is no secret. There is plenty of evidence confirming Google's preferential treatment of Wikipedia aside from the millions of daily Google searches that bring users directly to the encyclopedia. Although Wikipedia editors take full advantage of flawed medical literature, if the conclusions serve their purpose and agenda, Google, through its algorithmic modeling to censor voices challenging the medical regime's status quo, ignores efforts to determine whether the medical literature is bogus or not. Google's mission is to protect the global medical regime, protect the medical industrial empire. Not just private drug companies, but also government health bodies and international organizations like the World Health Organization, one of the most vile and corrupt organizations in history and one of the most dangerous. No longer should Google be perceived solely as a technological platform to promote the pharmaceutical industry's agenda. It is also a drug company itself. During the past 7 years, Google's parent company, Alphabet, has launched two pharmaceutical companies. In 2013, it founded Calico, C-A-L-I-C-O, headed by Genentech's former CEO, Arthur Levinson. Calico operates a research and development facility in San Francisco Bay Area for the discovery of treatments associated with age-related diseases, all pharmaceutical. 2 years later, Alphabet founded Verily Life Sciences, previously Google Life Sciences. Both companies partner with other drug firms, including Johnson & Johnson, Novartis, and vaccine giants Pfizer and Sanofi. In October, Verily launched an aggressive multi-million-dollar campaign to expand COVID-19 testing in California's most distressed communities in 28 counties. Moreover, some counties are starting to serve as testing platforms, but they're now waking up and severing their ties with the company. In order to qualify for the program's COVID test, people are required to have a Gmail account and provide highly sensitive personal information. Alphabet's drug companies, therefore, are intricately linked to Google's ambition to gather, control, and own everybody on the planet's personal information. In 2016, Verily collaborated with the European pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline to form a third company, Galvani Bioelectronics, for the development of, quote, bioelectric medicine, end quote. Among its initiatives are nanotechnology for drug delivery and the development of, quote, miniaturized implantable devices that can monitor nerve signals in your body, end quote. What could possibly go wrong with something that could read your brain, read your thoughts, or give you thoughts that override your existing capacity, if that is indeed one of their plans? Galvani's chairman is Moncef Seal, Glaxo's former chairman of its global vaccine business, who now serves as Trump's appointed chief science advisor for Operation Warp Speed. How is he vetted? It doesn't matter. Every administration is always beholden to the scientists who come forward from major vaccine companies or pharmaceutical companies to act as the, quote, objective observers, to sit on panels that recommend vaccines or other drugs. especially the CDC and the FDA. Nor should it be forgotten that Google's co-founder, Sergey Brin's former wife, Anne, also co-founded the biotech company 23andMe to develop personal DNA test kits. In 2018, it entered a partnership with Glaxo to expand into drug development. And by the way, for those of you who use 23andMe, because you just have to know who your ancestors were, did you read the contract that you signed? Who owns your DNA? In January 2019, Google's president of customer solutions, Mary Ellen Coe, COE, joined Merck's board of directors, formerly working at the corporate consulting firm of McKinsey and Company. Her role at Google includes overseeing the firm's global advertising for contracted companies. Merck's chairman, Kenneth Frazier, remarked in a press release that Coe, quote, will be a significant asset to Merck, end quote. To better appreciate the enormity of the global pharmaceutical regime now unfolding, we need to fully acknowledge this nightmarish marriage between big tech and information-based companies such as Google and Wikimedia Foundation and Big Pharma. As the world's most advanced search engine, Google has gained control over the Internet's most technically sophisticated surveillance systems and algorithms. Therefore, the company has positioned itself to perhaps be the greatest potential threat to human health via the flow of information and data viewed on our laptops, mobile phones, and computers. During the past 5 years, the pharmaceutical industry has shown a growing interest in the concept of virtual pharmacies, whereby drug companies can leverage their influence over consumers. Social media, notably Wikipedia, has become the consumers' most utilized resource for gaining knowledge about disease, drugs, and health. In a University of Sydney survey, Wikipedia was the first source of choice for gaining information about unfamiliar health topics, even among medical professionals. According to a 2013 joint analysis of this emerging trend conducted by the University of Zurich and Johnson & Johnson, drug companies can use these virtual platforms to tackle the challenges they face in the financial market and even within medical communities. However, the analysis also recommended that the best strategy would be for Big Pharma to invest heavily in virtual companies and secure partnerships. This strategy is gaining steam, whereby tech and social media companies such as Google and Wikimedia Foundation are being absorbed into the pharmaceutical machinery and vice versa. The dire results from this marriage are already being felt as we now witness Wikipedia morphing into another mouthpiece for Big Pharma. If Google's transformation into a drug company is not alone disturbing, the world's largest open source knowledge site is acutely entangled with the Silicon Valley giant and its manufacturing or pharmaceutical agenda. In early 2019, Google dumped $3.1 million into Wikimedia Foundation's bank account, which brings total contributions from Google to and Sergey Brin to over $7.5 million. Curiously, the announcement of Google's endowment was made at the World Economic Forum at Davos. The donation also includes Google's intention, listen carefully, please, everyone, to provide Wikipedia editors with its high-tech learning tools. According to Wired magazine, which published an article that further defines Google Wikimedia Foundation relationship over the years, with respect to Google's generous contribution, journalist Louise Metaskis writes, quote, but the decision isn't altruistic. Google already uses Wikimedia or Wikipedia content in a number of its own products. The company also has used Wikipedia articles to train machine learning algorithms, as well as fight misinformation on YouTube, end quote. Now, with Jimmy Wells' intention to take on the cause of fighting, quote, fake news, end quote, a cause also aligned with his personal skeptic ideology as the ultimate arbiter that determines what is real and fake, skeptic editors have free access to advanced algorithmic apps to proceed with their agenda to scrub Wikipedia of any content that is favorable towards alternative medicine lifestyle, or any content that is critical of the pharmaceutical or government agencies or major corporations. Yet Google's and Jimmy Wales' mutual interests go beyond the construction of a pharmaceutical-ruled society. Brennan Wells first sealed a close relationship during their early efforts to counter the Stop Online Piracy Act, SOPA. Together, both executives, among others, signed a joint open letter to the federal governments opposing SOPA, which was coincidentally around the same time of Brin's $500,000 donation. In 2014, in a reaction against legal issues over piracy matters, Google created an advisory council. Wells was one of its founding members. In 2012, Google's charitable arm, Google.org, initiated a collaboration with Wikimedia Foundation's Wiki Project Medicine, quote, to further improve the quality of articles, end quote, by recruiting and hiring, quote, professional medical editors, end quote. Dr. James Heilman, a Canadian emergency room physician and a seasoned senior Wikipedia administrator who frequently comes to the defense of skeptic Wikipedians, sits on Wikimedia Foundation's Board of Trustees. Heilman is one of the founders of the Wiki Project Med Foundation to advance its mission to give, quote, every single person free access to the sum of all medical knowledge, end quote. Wikimedia Foundation, Medical Foundation, now has collaborated relationships with the National Institutes of Health, Cancer Research UK, Cochrane Collaboration, University of California at San Francisco, the Wellcome Trust, they make Burroughs Wellcome, which makes AZT, and several open access medical journals. Recently, during the COVID-19 pandemic, Wikimedia Foundation has strengthened its ties with the global medical establishment. Last October, it entered a collaboration with the World Health Organization to assure that public health information and data about COVID-19 is regulated in accordance with the latest pronouncements made by the anointed authorities in the institutional medical establishment. Wikipedia already contains over 5,200 COVID-related entries in 175 languages, and these are largely based upon the World Health Organization's sources. Can you believe anything the World Health Organization says about COVID? They have been wrong repeatedly. It is estimated that this content is accessed at least a million times a day. Part of the Wikimedia Foundation's commitment is to monitor and censor, quote, the spread of misinformation, end quote. According to the World Health Organization criteria, that means that every scientist, every medical doctor, every nurse, every politician, every activist, every journalist who finds problems with the existing paradigm is censored, attacked, reputations destroyed. That's what it means. And that's unfortunate. In a New York Times article reporting on the new partnership, if this initial pilot COVID-19 project succeeds, it will be expanded to launch additional efforts, quote, to counter misinformation regarding AIDS, Ebola, influenza, polio, and dozens of other diseases. Therefore, they could be censoring everything that is truthful about what's wrong with our medical, industrial, pharmaceutical paradigm. So where exactly is the cesspool of modern medicine and the toxic food, vaccine, and agrochemical industries? Are we to discover truth? Few in the scientific and federal health agencies can be trusted anymore. Most are compromised, and this distortion of truth for global leverage clearly extends throughout Google and Wikipedia. Rarely is a mainstream journalist trustworthy, and no one can be certain whether a paper appearing in a peer-reviewed science journal or a medical entry on Wikipedia is reliable or not. Even clinical physicians on the front lines of healthcare work in the dark. It is only after large numbers of injuries and deaths due to Agent Orange, DDT, life-threatening vaccines, adverse reactions, Vioxx, and all the other scandals, hundreds of scandals, of bad drugs, bad vaccines, bad medical procedures, or an epidemic of corporate-liable opiate drug overdoses, that finally a light bulb eventually goes on, but only for a limited time, seconds. You pay fines, everyone's happy, there's a celebration, Wall Street cheers, the value of the stock in the company goes up, and everything is quickly forgotten and goes dark again. The reason for American medicine turning into the nation's largest and deadliest battlefield is because scientific corruption is legally protected to proceed with impunity. The Surgeon General, the heads of federal health agencies, drug makers and insurance industry executives, medical schools and professional associations, Google and Wikimedia Foundation and the media operate as a single voice that the American health system is the best in the world. It is garbage. It is not. We have the best emergency care in the world and the worst of everything else from the developed nations. Corporate interests and massive profiteering control everything. And they own everybody, left and right. That's why you won't see a true universal healthcare system. Modern medicine has morphed into a religious cult that is incapable of self-reflection about its own vulnerabilities and failures. This hubris of power and domination plagues Google and the Wikimedia Foundation equally. But will they come to a moment of a clarion call? Maybe we've been part of the problem. Don't bet on it. I find nothing ethical, moral, or with a higher level of integrity in any of these individuals or fields. And numerous patients are being played for fools. In conclusion, the fact is that all players in the architecture of our modern medical system are vulnerable to corruption. Private industries and government know this perfectly. The checks and balances between private and public interests have collapsed. Today, the medical regime is a single entity. All of its parts are consolidated and entwined into a monolithic behemoth to protect its bottom line. In our opinion, Google and Wikimedia Foundation have been co-opted to serve as the guardians of this culture of corruption. Therefore, they both are equally culpable in the widespread destruction of the nation's public health. Yet we mustn't expect that the trajectory of an emerging global pharmaceutical hegemony will experience a collapse anytime soon. It'll get stronger, not weaker. It'll refortify itself because it controls all of the major media, all the major journalists, the entirety of the medical establishment. Why do you think you only find 40,000 physicians worldwide and scientists speaking out and signing a petition about what's wrong with the lockdowns when we have 900,000 more or less physicians in the United States? When was the last time those individuals woke up one day and say, maybe I should spend some time on ethical issues and stop medical practices, no matter how profitable it is, and look for other, more natural ways of healing a patient and address some of these egregious, corrupt ways that we are practicing medicine? Good luck waiting for four people to show up for that demonstration. Everything is monopolized, and that is shaping national public health policy. And this requires greater efforts to censor and silence the medical critics. Everyone who has the truth, you will be censored, you will be attacked, you will be vilified. And once your bio's up on Wikipedia, it will be as if you're running a gauntlet that never ends. And every one of these anonymous are there to make sure that you are libeled and attacked. If you're an honest investigative journalist, you will be marginalized and attacked. If you try to bring light to the medical and scientific flaws that we are steeped in, and if you try to address public health policies or seek laws that are based through the virtual technological apparatus and information control Google and Wikimedia provides, then you will be a part of the problem. In short, tech companies now control and dictate orders to the morally deficient and competent in Washington, which are all of them. Yet the emergence of a pharmaceutical regime as a natural consequence of humanity being in the midst of the fourth industrial revolution is unfolding to the delight of Jimmy Wells, Wall Street, major corporate leaders, all of the people, the at least 1 million people in the Washington area who all benefit from crisis. They profit from it. And his skeptic denizens who worship his messianic mission to make all knowledge free to the world, providing that it's their knowledge. But the question has always been, whose knowledge, Jimmy? Skepticism, pseudo-knowledge, of course. It is not uncommon to find skeptics acknowledging Wells as one of their own. Wells has provided plenty of assistance to skeptics and on occasion has come to their defense in discussion groups, relying upon what he believes is the right way. In final conclusion, the pharmaceutical industry has no need to attack the competition of non-conventional natural medicine on Wikipedia, nor is there a need to hire or pay off Wikipedians to do this dirty work for them, since skeptics are already doing so freely and involuntarily. And skeptic administrators receive the perks of being provided with Google's algorithmic tools and apps to protect their message. It's a completely rigged game, and Wells and the Wikimedia Foundation seem to have every intention to keep it going. America's 21st century technological god, with a silicon-crafted body, demands the sacrifice of the world's children and elderly and persons for profit in its furnace of drugs and vaccines. John Milton and the beat poet Allen Ginsberg would surely agree. If alive, we might hear Ginsberg howling against this devouring techno-pharmacal empire on YouTube. Oh, but I forgot, Google owns YouTube. From its humble beginnings and with the technological resources and generous funding received from Google, Wikipedia has now morphed into a chaos war with truth and falsehoods, amusingly ruled over by this postmodern Moloch. The dangerous fallout is that objectivity and ethics are being increasingly sacrificed on a cold virtual altar devoted to a perverted metaphysical realism disguised as medical science and fact. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you for listening, and have a nice day.